welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Victorian Aboriginal News Van Talks podcast. I'm your host, Charles Parkiner.
Victorian Aboriginal News acknowledges and pays respect to traditional owners and custodians across Australia. We acknowledge the elders who have gone before, those who currently lead their communities, and those who will follow in years and generations to come.
For well over 20 years, Gunai man Uncle Alan Thorpe has been single-mindedly focused on supporting Aboriginal men across Victoria and working to help those men take an active role in building stronger families and safer communities. As the CEO of Dadi Manwaro, Strong Spirit in Gunai language, he continues that work with a growing number of staff and supporters. And in July this year, at the recommendation of his community, Uncle Alan was named Victoria's NAIDOC Male Elder of the Year. He joins us today on Van Talks to speak about his work and aspirations for Dadi Manwaro and community. Uncle Alan, thanks for joining us here on the program.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Uncle Alan, you and a colleague started Dadi Manwaro back in the 1990s, and we've heard stories over the years. You and I have yarned about it. You had an old car, and you'd travel all over Victoria. You'd pretty well live and sleep in the car as you were setting up. So what was the goal back then, and what's the story about the car?
Yeah, no, it was actually before then. It was back in the late 90s, and we used to meet down at the old Advancement League in Cunningham Street, and we just created a bit of a space for men to gather, really just to connect and support each other. So, yeah, we just gathered down there, and we sort of created a little space on the Sundays, and that's where I started to get involved and started initiating that space for men to come to a safe space. And actually, this is part of it in the journey of Dadi when we created some community strengthening days. So it has a bit of a history. And Jay was involved in it, and who works with us now, and some others. And so it was really, it was just a really informal catch up. And then Dadi started later. Yeah.
But you're quoted as saying that you two were in that position of needing that Aboriginal men's healing, that you wanted to be a better dad and a better partner. Now, we're not going to dive into that, but why do you think it's so important within the Aboriginal space that we have specific programs that are for Aboriginal men? What's different from your perspective and Dadi's perspective in these programs?
Well, personally, what I believe in and what our principles are about self-determination, so it's got to be Aboriginal-led. Like, self-determination was really alive in the 70s and 60s and or 70s and 80s. And for me, it was all Aboriginal-led. Like, it was driven by our people. We designed the programs. We led the programs. We led our own destiny, really. So for me, growing up in that and seeing what it was like, and it was very powerful. We were in the driver's seat. So I've drawn on that. Like, I grew up with that experience. So, and then I feel like, yeah, I mean, systems have taken over and we've lost our purpose and our self-determination in what we believe should be right. So I'm a real big believer in self-determination. Yep. It's very empowering. And so, yeah, Aboriginal men need to lead Aboriginal men.
Now, talking about the driver's seat, I just want to jump back to the car. We're not going to get away with this without talking about the car. Yeah. Tell us about the early days of Dadi Manwaro itself and travelling across Victoria to set up these gatherings, these satellite, which they've become essentially satellite organisations, haven't they, to Dadi. So tell us a little bit about then and the car.
Yeah. So the car was just a really good resource. I actually bought the car off Lionel Bamblett back.
Oh, yeah. Uncle Lionel.
So I bought the car off him, and it had gas in it, which was good because I had dual fuel. So it got me long distances in the Mildura.
Mm.
And it wasn't about, like, at the time it was limited funding, but it was the power of the work. It was the power of men gathering and doing some workshops and talking about the important issues around, you know, being a dad, and healing was a big part of it, and the safe space. I think that, for me, it's not something we've created. Like, it was just being able to provide a space, but I think it's about restoration. For me, men's business was part of our culture.
Yeah.
And I reckon that when we come together as men, Aboriginal men, it's a very powerful thing, you know, And so the power in that's unbelievable, but I think systems have taken us in another direction. So the car, yeah, it was just
well, what sort of car was it?
It was a Commodore Calais. And
so you've got some Aboriginal V8, men driving around Victoria in a V8 Commodore.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, we had elders, the car was always full of papers in the back, and lucky, you know, it's like working out of an office. And but the car, the resource was important, you know, and I actually give that car to my little cousin.
Yeah.
It was his birthday, so and I actually give him the car.
How long did you have it for?
Oh, about 8 years, 10 years. Yeah.
But I'm interested, so you were talking about going up to Mildura. You're a Fitzroy boy. You were born and bred in Fitzroy and you grew up around Gertrude Street.
Yeah.
Why all the way over in Mildura or up in Mildura, why not focus just in Melbourne?
We did.
In those early days.
Yeah. It was Vars and Murray Valley Aboriginal Co-op who we partnered with, and it's community and even Lakes Entrance. We went up to Gippsland and ran programs up there. So it was really wherever we were invited. Travelled to Mildura and Robinvale, Swan Hill and, you know, Gippsland and, yeah, really all over the place. But, you know, I remember just sometimes I couldn't even afford. I mean, people don't realise that first 12 years was really tough. Like it was.
I remember we spoke about it when you used to be back further down in down towards High Street.
Yeah.
You used to be almost under a staircase. I think that's where your offices were initially before you moved here into the new premises. But, you know, 12 years of working on really the smell of an oily rag.
Yes.
There must have been times where you just felt like throwing it all in and saying, look, I'll go and get a job somewhere, for goodness sake.
It was tough as it was. I remember I used to pull up at Woodwood Caravan Park, like, and have lucky I had a swag and a tent. Sometimes I slept in the car.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't even afford accommodation, you know, I was really stretched.
So what kept you going?
I think just having that purpose of what I really wanted to do, you know. I believe, like, I was on a mission. I was really hurting in organisation, like around what your limitations were, what you can do and what you can't do. And I think it was just the freedom and the purpose of what I think taking risks as well, like being able to do things that probably an organisation would have held you back, and, you know, because of the bureaucracy and other things. And I mean, I used to get home at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes. So, like, that would have been, I mean, sometimes you look back, Charles, and you look, geez, how did I, you know? I think I just had a lot of energy and a lot of purpose and drive. And now I think back, being an older man, I just couldn't do it. But, you know, thinking a bit smarter now, but you do when you're in
the folly,
you
know,
get a bit
youth.
Wiser, yeah?
Yeah.
But just when you're driven and you just see outcomes and you know, when you're supporting men in a good way and doing a lot of healing work and seeing transformation is just a really powerful thing to experience and to see and see change, you know. I love breaking the system. I love intergenerational change, you know.
Yeah.
And seeing growth and freedom and, yeah, I just think, you know, there's a lot of pain that we carried as a community and families, and I believe, you know, we need to heal that.
So now that you're here, you've got these purpose premises in Preston, in High Street Preston. You've got the main offices here where you're running all sorts of activities. You've got so many staff. You've got the Arnie Alma Thorpe's gathering place next door, which is now almost this gathering place, not just for Aboriginal men but for community as a whole.
Yeah.
Where's Dadi Munwarro heading in the future?
Yeah, I just think it's about systemic change now, and it's grown rapidly in the last, you know, probably 4 or 5 years.
Massively
around the state. So we've got about 7 offices, and you know, we've got a workforce now that, you know, deals with social emotional well-being, but also work employment opportunities, and it's got to keep evolving.
Well, you've expanded. You've got a traffic management system now, don't you?
Yeah, well, we've got about 90 working on that, traffic management,
good
which
Lord.
Is an EPA.
Yeah.
And 40% have actually been in a justice system. So,
and this is a big thing, actually, helping men coming out of the justice system?
Yes. Yeah, no, it's what we've got to do, you know. We've got to One of the things that I've always learnt, you learn along the journey as well. You learn at what works and what doesn't. So part of the teachings is around and learning is of innovation and creating the gaps. You know, when you're on a journey of change, it's a long-term sustainable thing. Like there's no 16-week program, 8-week program or 3-month program. Or it's actually – it's a future that's really important because it's like putting a jigsaw together.
Yeah.
You've got to put the pieces together. And we talk a lot about holistic. And so for me, it's giving up addictions or addressing your mental health or addressing your trauma is one thing, but you've got to fill it with opportunity. And so for me, it's about housing, employment, and the continuum support, you know.
So talking about housing, you purchased – or Dadi Marmoro purchased some housing for men, I think a few years ago, a bit longer than that. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, it started with Collingwood. So we started the first men's healing and family violence program residential in the world, you know. So it's a 16-week program and men come in and they reside. And Collingwood helped actually, you know, the foundation actually helped us with the housing part. So
when you're saying Collingwood – the Collingwood Football Club.
Yeah. Yep. They've got a foundational arm, which is...
Oh, Barwon? Is that...
A foundational arm.
Oh, like right, yeah.
Part of Collingwood Football Club, they have a foundation that then helps community in different programs. And so a man named David Emerson helped us and provided some housing, and Justice provided some of the operational, so we're able to create these housing. And so the men come in for 16 weeks and... I think about 82% complete the program. Like, so it's a pretty successful program. And
how many men can you take at a time?
We can take up to 8 to 10 at a time, comfortably, you know.
And these are men who have come in from the justice system?
Mainly from the incarceration.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of men come from the system.
So now this obviously relies heavily, or success of this relies heavily on this holistic model that you're developing here, where you're providing the guidance, the support, and then also you're providing them with employment opportunities. So that's obviously not something that can be developed overnight by anybody. Mm. So how many people are involved in this, and how many sort of balls are you keeping juggling in the air just to keep it going?
Yeah, you just got to build a good team and committed people around you. You're only as good as the people around you, you know.
Yeah.
And if they align the values and what you know, what holistic represents and what, you know, if they're invested and buy in, it actually works. But it's like anything, I think, Charles, one of the things is working, having people. You know, one of the things that I've learnt is that you've got to delegate. So, you know, you can't control everything.
But that's hard after the first 12 years when you'd be doing it all by yourself in a Commodore V8.
Oh, yeah, when you're driven and you sort of – you're just turning up, you're facilitating. And so I've just got some really good people who've got the – like, you know, Corey Thorpe and his team, and you've got
– now, Corey's your 2IC essentially,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yep. Corey has been amazing. Just really good community spirit, good values. So he takes care of a lot of that stuff as well.
Now, how important are relationships? Because I know Dadi Marmoro does a heck of a lot by itself, but I know you've got relationships with Darabin Council, for example, and they've helped quite a bit over the years in some ways. What about other organisations that you partner with? How important is that?
Yeah, well, collaboration's a really big one, isn't it? Like, you know, you can't – I think that's one of the things that we've got to get better at, is if we're going to – you know, that thing around close the gap is that we've got to try and create the pathways to support different, because I believe everyone brings something.
Yeah.
But it's just connecting it is an important part. And, you know, we're creating a hub just next door to Arnie Elmer's where we're hoping to get some services together.
Now, you actually bought another premises here on High Street in Preston.
Yeah.
So next to the gathering place. So there'll actually be three physical addresses here in the Dadi Marmoro complex.
Yeah.
So we saw quite a few months ago that you were in there gutting this old premises in there to create this community hub.
Yeah.
So what are the goals down there?
Yeah, so Dadi Marmoro sits in this building that we're currently sitting in. This is our sort of operational. Arnie Elmer's is another purpose of what that, you know, they all have purposes. So it's not just about having physical spaces. You've got to have meaning and a purpose for them, because that's where it went, spirit. And so yeah, having only Elmers, which is a great connector for community, but having the services wrap around where community can come to, you know, we talk a lot about decolonising, you know, and I love the idea. I'm still learning and trying to understand the concept, but it's the physical spaces and the spirit that decolonises, you know. And so for me, having the elements also, like only Elmers, is just a great healing space, and it's a great gathering space, and it serves multi-purposes. With the hub, it's all about services, you know, being together and working that collaboration.
But you're building it almost in the hope that they will come.
Yes.
How far off are we from building this field of dreams in the hope that they will come?
Yeah, I reckon the physical space will be ready hopefully by Christmas.
Right.
And the people, the services in there, they'll be the governance of it. So we want to create a model that there's a bit of ownership.
And have you reached out to any organisations?
No, we're just in that process at the moment. Still early stages, you know. And
are we able to talk about any that you've reached out to, or is that still on the hush-hush?
No, we're going to invite everybody, really.
Right.
Like whoever wants to be part of the journey of collaboration.
And we've got a lot of Aboriginal community-controlled organisations around the Darebin area, don't we?
I think there's about 17.
About 17, so, yeah, I believe so.
You know, if you get five working together, that's a good outcome, eh?
So do you see the hub as not just helping Dadi Munwaro in providing a more holistic sort of service, but also really just the ACOs helping the ACOs by being in that close proximity and being able to connect?
Yeah, it's not even about Dadi. It's not even about the ACO. It's about community. That's the problem. We've got to get away from that decolonised thinking and think about the community that are in the system that we're trying to pull out of the system, you know. So part of that is our change of thinking.
Yeah.
And this isn't about ACOs. This isn't about Dadi. This is about our mob, you know, and the purpose of what we're trying to achieve as a collective. But for me, that's what we turn up for, you know.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, sadly, it's a way we've systemically thought in our thinking that we've got to unpack a little bit, you know, because I feel like we need change. If we're going to transform community, we need change. Yeah.
On that, on transforming community, on decolonising and on seeking change, what would you like to see from the rest of community? Because right now, when it comes to that change, it's very much reliant on Dadi Munwaro and the ACOs. What would you like to see change throughout community?
Yeah, well, I think we get caught up in the external stuff a lot. And I think,
for example?
Yeah. Oh, well, we're always looking to unpack the system and understand and the external, what's happening in that world. Sometimes if you want transformation, you've got to internalise it. So for me, it's about the decolonisers internalise it, not externalise it.
Yeah.
Because you can spend your whole, I've seen so many people die young, elders, leaders, because they've committed their whole life trying to fight the system. And the system's a very powerful thing. But what we can change and what we can control is what we can control, you know. And that's internal. Like, we can make decisions. We can lead. We can actually make a difference, and I think it's how we do that. So for me, it's about the internalising how we operate our systems and our practices. So for me, it's about, you know, and looking at the physical spaces we have currently, looking at the spiritual spaces, how do we connect with community, how do we, you know, unpack and all that sort of stuff, because how we operated in the 70s and 80s in our physical spaces is different to constructive construct now of how we build spaces, you know. And so for me, that's decolonising, about how we access community or community access spaces.
Do we need to bring in, still maintaining that Aboriginal-led practice, but do we need to start bringing in non-Aboriginal organisations to go along that path with us?
I'm a big believer in, it's about whatever's going to help our mob, you know.
So whether they're black, white or polka dot, it doesn't matter.
If they're making a difference, you know, for me, as long as they're making a difference, you know. And because I think, you know, when we look at our data and we look at our progressiveness, are we really making a difference, you know. And so that's, you know, sometimes you've got to be courageous in that and ask, you know, what are we doing right and what do we need to change, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really hard, looking internal for any change is a hard thing, but, yeah, I think we can certainly do better. And the way we get growth in organisations and in communities, internalise it, you know, is how we're showing up and how we're operating from a community.
Yeah.
To make it sure. You know, just growing up as a kid, I loved it because I felt connected with community. I felt connected with the Yachos and organisations.
You know, is that missing now a lot, do you think?
100%. I mean, if you talk to a lot of people in that era, like you used to, I mean, just, it's because of the landscape as well. I think, you know, Gertrude Street and Fitzroy was a really powerful place to be.
It's all changed now.
It's all changed. So how do we keep the same spirit and the same connection as now we've all relocated, because it's a bit of a disconnect?
So do you see that Dardi Manwarra, and I know you don't like talking specifically about Dardi, but do you see Dardi as facilitating the filling of that gap that we've got now with Smith Street gone and Gertrude Street gone, or at least the spirit of those places gone?
Yeah, well, I can only go from my experiences growing up, you know, and what I felt and what I've seen, and I want to restore that. Like, they're my teachings and learnings, and I want to honour that, you know, and I want to bring that back because it actually worked. I think, you know, I can only control what and make decisions and contribute to what Dardi's journey is, you know, and I can't control what others do. But
talking about Dardi's journey and coming back to one of the questions I asked you earlier on, where to now for Dardi Manwarra, specifically, some specific areas?
Yeah, so Dardi's become evolving and Dardi's become more of a holistic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think Dardi's probably in the best space it's ever been, you know, in terms of offering different things, you know, and it's not just about healing now, it's about opportunity, it's about the future.
Yeah.
And it's about housing, it's about employment, it's about all them things that really transform you. Because you can talk about holistic all you want, you know, but until you actually put the pieces together, you're still working one piece, you know, you work on one muscle, as they say, you know. So you got to get all the muscles working, right? So
there speaks an ex-footballer without a shadow of a doubt.
Now he's having strong calves and weak hammies, you know. So that's the learning is about. And, you know, part of this is what I really love about Dardi is we're actually that connected to the community and the men and the women and young people who actually participate in Dardi's journey. And one of the things that I really want to honour is we listen and we actually, when we develop and invite a Dardi, it comes from the bottom up. It doesn't come from the top down. And so community will suggest things or see things or they'll experience different things and it's like they'll express that or feedback that. So you act on it and that's where you get your teachings and the people's experiences that I love. It's really organic and it's evolving from – people don't realise that. You haven't always got the answers from the top down, you know. Your learnings are from the community, you know, and that's what I really love about how we do business at Dardi, you know, and take it on board.
Uncle Alan Thorpe, I want to thank you so much indeed for your time. I am going to pin you down right now and get you to commit. Let's touch base in about 9 months and see how the hub's going.
Yes.
And we'll do a special podcast for that episode. How's that?
I'd love to connect again. And thank you, Charles, for the
anytime, for the Uncle Alan.
Opportunity,
Really, really appreciate it. And congratulations on the award as Victorian Male Elder of the Year. Well deserved, Uncle.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
For a full transcript of this interview, visit the Victorian Aboriginal News website at vicaboriginalnews.com.au. Until our next episode, stay safe and stay informed.